In the Dancing with Shiva lexicon, the word karma has three distinct meanings. What are they? Action, yes, the simplest meaning of the word karma is action. In its simplest form, it has a very broad meaning, action. So you say karma yoga, that's one form. That's one use of the word karma as action, the yoga of action. They say different other kinds of karma, it doesn't come to my mind. Karma kanda is a training in Homa, the Vedic training in Homa is called karma kanda. Way of action, you're doing ceremonies. Okay, that's the simplest one. Now, what's the second one?
Principle of cause and effect.
Yes, principle of cause and effect, commonly called the law of karma. And law of karma is that each action causes a reaction. So, actions which are helpful to other people generate actions, reactions back to us, which help us. Actions which harm other people to one degree or another eventually generate actions that come back to us that harm us. So that's the law of cause and effect. Okay, and we have the third meaning. What's the third meaning of karma? The meaning of karma is, if someone says, "Oh, it must have been my karma," what do they mean? What do they mean?
They're taking responsibility for it.
No, it's the third meaning of the word.
Destiny or fate.
Yes, you could call it that. But in terms of karma, what is it? Yes, it's the accumulated effects of our past actions. It's our individual effects that we're carrying forward. You come into life with a certain amount of karma, right? So that's the effects of our past actions. And usually it means the ones that are unresolved. Must have been my karma. So in precision, it's called karmapala, or the fruit of action. Karmapala. So we have three meanings. We can open up and look. There they are. Just like we did it. So that's the Tamil lexicon. Don't have any Tamil scholars here today, but just for your reference. That's the word in the Thirukkural. It's ul. See it there, Tamil lexicon? Ul. It's the chapter. Fruit of karma. Fruit of deeds committed in a former birth or births. So that's what Sadhananda was saying. That's the third meaning. And then that's the summary there of the exactly what our Dancing with Shiva lexicon says, the three meanings of the word karma. Okay, and that took 4.5 minutes. Okay, back out to the sheet. Can look at the answer. Karmapala, the fruits of actions, the reactions to our actions, has three categories within it. What are they and how do they differ? Boy, this is tough, huh? Yeah, Parabdha, yes, one was said, Parabdha, I hope that wasn't the one you remembered.
I was going to say, no, the one, and I don't know the Sanskrit, but the seeds of karma that haven't manifested may not manifest in this world.
Yes, well, one is Sanchitta, yes, but that's not quite one of them. Okay, we got two names, Sanchitta and Prarabdha. Kriyamana. Okay, now we got the three Sanskrit names. So let's look at Sanchitta first. Anybody remember Sanchitta? It's close to what you said. Seeds of karma that are going to manifest in this life are Prarabdha. Prarabdha is that which is going to manifest in this life. Yes.
The Sanchitta is the sum total of all of our karmas that we have yet to face.
Yes, Sanchitta is the sum total. Right, so Prarabdha is a subset of Sanchitta. And what's Kriyamana? Creating new karmas. Yes, Kriyamana is new karmas that we're creating as we go along. So that's the three categories. So usually what we create doesn't add to Prarabdha. It doesn't add to what we're going to experience in this life. Usually it's just part of Sanchitta. It's not the Prarabdha. Because our karma isn't that speedy. Most people's karma isn't that speedy. It takes time. Very long process. Okay, so we got the three. That's good. So that's... we have an analogy. This is a good analogy here. And that's, okay, so down at the bottom here of our answers. To better understand this idea, let's create an analogy to planting seeds. Imagine we have a seed storeroom with 50 different kinds of seed in it with an average of about 5 of each. So that's meaning we have 250 karmas we're bringing into this life. That's the idea, seed storeroom. We take one of each of the different kinds of seeds and plant it in a field. Different kinds of seeds will sprout under different conditions. Some prefer warm, dry weather. Others lots of rain, and others prefer the cold. Even though all the seeds were planted at the same time, they will sprout at different times in the coming year, right? The seeds in the storeroom represent all the unresolved karmas we are bringing into this life and are called Sanchitta. The seeds we take from the storeroom and plant are those seeds that will manifest in this life and are called Prarabdha karma. Prarabdha is that portion of Sanchitta karma scheduled to be experienced in the present life, shaping its events and conditions, including the nature of our bodies, personal tendencies, and associations. The seeds left in the storeroom will manifest in future lives. Different times of the year, under different conditions, different seeds that have been planted will sprout. Likewise, at different times in our life, under the influence of different planets, different karmas scheduled to be experienced in this life will manifest. Thus, an individual will experience certain astrological periods as difficult, and other periods as auspicious and positive. The seed sprouting, of course, symbolizes our experiencing the karma in our life. In addition to Sanchitta and Prarabdha karma, the third type is Kriyamana, which is karma you are presently creating. While some Kriyamana karmas bear fruit in the current life, others are stored for future births. In other words, some of our current life actions create seeds that are placed in the seed storeroom, and others create seeds that are planted in the field and will sprout in this life. In terms of the analogy, Sanchitta karma includes the seeds in the storeroom and those in the field that are unsprouted, as it is always the sum total of all unresolved karmas. Here's a quote from Yogaswami. Events take place according to Prarabdha karma. They do not affect the soul. But man, by mere habit, identifies himself with these events and becomes subject to pain and pleasure. That's a nice one. Okay. Then we have verses from the Chorale here, through Chorale, which show the idea of actions bearing fruit. Those who bear children of blameless character will be untouched by evil for 7 births. It only takes a single birth for a fool to earn by his efforts a morass of misery in the succeeding 7 births. So this is the idea that what we do carries forward. In fact, there's 4 more verses, a total of 6, which have this same idea that what we do in some way carries forward normally for 7 births if we don't do something to change it. So that's the idea. Are we clear on these 3 kinds of karma? The most important idea is the idea that we're carrying karmas forward and they don't all manifest in this life. It's just a select portion manifest. That's the idea we're trying to get clear. And therefore, at any point in time, we have this whole storeroom of seeds for our next life. So it's sitting there and we have to keep getting born to get rid of it. Sitting there. Okay. And that took 12 minutes.
Questions?
Yes, questions.
Does, Sadhguru Gaurinatha, does being in a place of intense spiritual energy, like the island of Kauai, or in the vicinity of Shiva Fire Temple, up the rate at which our karmas are coming to us to be spotted?
Well, I don't think the island does. In terms of the temple does to some extent, but you have to be aware of the temple's vibration. Just because you live next to the temple doesn't mean it'll do anything. It's different than something physical. You stand out in the sun, even if you say the sun doesn't exist, you're still going to be affected by its rays. Your opinion of it doesn't matter. It's physical. You stand out in the wind's going to blow against you no matter what your opinions are about the wind. But you stand next to a Hindu temple, you live next to a Hindu temple, if you're not open to it in your mind, it won't affect you. It has to do with the mind. The other things are just physical, they're automatic. Any other questions on that? Yes.
When we take sadhana, we're trying to, it seems like our karmas accelerate and start associating with swamis. Is that a way of not wanting to have to come and keep paying all of those bills, just trying to get some of those seats taken care of?
Oh, Guru Deva says they accelerate. Yes, there's a number of references to that in the trilogy. That if you're doing regular sadhana, not just reading the books or socializing, but actually doing the sadhana, doing the practices, then it accelerates the speed at which your karma is resolved. So it can make it seem like things are getting worse instead of better. I'm doing all these practices and I'm going through more difficult times than before. Because the karma might be difficult ones that you're accelerating. Yes?
Does that help us?
Well, yes, it helps you move forward through the process more quickly. But the key is not creating new ones. No matter how fast you go through the old ones, if you're creating new ones at an equal pace, you're standing still. You understand? If you go through 100, but you create 100, if you're going through 200 and you create 200 more, your net sum is unchanged. So it's a combination of, Guru Deva says, the key to the resolution of karma is intelligent action and dispassionate reaction, remember? Remember that? Intelligent action. We act in a way that doesn't create new karma, negative karma. It's intelligent action. We act in a way that doesn't create new negative karma. Dispassionate reaction. When things go wrong and people mistreat us and the world is unfair, we don't lash out. We don't retaliate. We don't even retaliate in our mind. Say, I wonder what I did to create that. That must have been interesting. There's a lady in Mauritius who's very good at that. And when someone mistreats her, she says, oh, thank you for bringing my karma back to me. How many of us would say that? You know, someone mistreats us and we say, oh, thank you so much for bringing my karma back to me. I now have one karma less. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, you mitigate karma. We'll look at that a little bit later. Definitely mitigation. We won't explain it now because then we'd be repeating it later. But yes, your good actions in the present mitigate past karmas. Yes.
Mm-hmm. To have a sum zero for karma?
Yes, all our karmas are gone.
And so the follow-on question to that is, if you continue to do just good deeds,
mm-hmm.
are we carrying like too much of good stuff that will hold us back? Does the question even make sense?
Yes, well it doesn't, it's a logical question. But the idea is that purely good deeds don't have the same kind of karmic consequences. And if you keep going, Gurudeva says, you know, advanced spiritual being is creating karma and resolving it simultaneously. It's just almost an immediate process. Because the karma you're creating is always good karma. It's not harmful karma where it has to come back. So it speeds up, and because it's just good karma, it comes back, and eventually it's as if there's none there. But that's a very good point, and Gurudeva's definition of moksha is threefold, that moksha is attained when all dharma has been fulfilled, all karma resolved, and God fully realized. So quite often this thought of is all I have to do is realize God. I'll sit under a tree and realize God and be enlightened and achieve moksha. But Gurudeva says, no, we have to fulfill all dharma. I mean, we're living through the many kinds of experiences that life has to offer over many lifetimes. Different careers, different positions in life, being a man, being a woman, being a mother, father, we're doing all the different dharmas to mature us. And we're resolving all karmas that we've created in the process. So it's a long period. You can't totally truncate it, shorten it. And on top of that, you need to realize God. And we have to write that. We got a lot of questions on that one. What do you think? 15 minutes of questions? About that. Okay, this is called first question. The others are discussion points. These are actual questions that were submitted. We have learned that karma is not fate. That means, when Gurudeva uses the term fate, it means a destiny coming to us from the outside that's unchangeable. Fate. You can't do anything about it. It's not that. And that we have the freedom to choose. No, it only took 8 minutes of questions. Okay. However, aren't we conditioned to react in a certain way? Early childhood experiences influence the way one reacts to situations. The subconscious impressions of childhood impels one to behave in a certain way. whose childhood experiences are a result of karma. In that sense, is there real freedom? Doesn't the karmic consequences of our past actions shape even the way we react to situations? Oh, it's saying that we don't have a choice. It's all kind of predestined by our karma. How does unresolved karma pala, past karma yet to be faced, influence the way we react to situations? Can you think of any other influences from past lives that affect the current life and how we react to situations? Okay, this is going to stretch you, huh? Why? Yes. This one, talking about this childhood, what we experienced, the reaction patterns that we experienced in the childhood of this life, didn't our karma create them? And therefore, isn't karma really influencing our whole life because these childhood reactionary patterns influence everything we do? So, twofold question. How does past karma influence the way we react to situations? And then, what are the other influences from past lives? If you can't figure it out, that's all right. It's not my question. First two were mine. That was very easy. Any ideas?
Mm-hmm. Ignorance of the soul blinds you to what your past karma is going to be. If you knew it all, it would be terrifying, I think.
Well, yes, yes. Remembering the things we did wrong in one life is difficult enough. You know, imagining being able to remember everything we did wrong in 50 lives, couldn't get out of bed in the morning. It's good, right? We get a fresh start. You know, we're burdened enough with one life. Yes.
I don't know the answer to the question, but my gut feeling is mm-hmm. that even if karma from past lives brought me into a certain childhood or mm-hmm. had certain impressions mm-hmm. that influence the way I react to situations now, that mm-hmm. there's still the ability to make choices and overcome those impressions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so that's definitely the way the material goes inside, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, deep emotions are also part of it. Yes, deep emotions from the past are different than karmas. So part of the problem is these questions are attributing too much to karma. And as you're pointing out, there's other influences. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, definitely. The child can exhibit wisdom and not just reaction. Okay, I can see the question is challenging. Well, fortunately, the answer is inside. Well, first of all, we're looking at influences and one of them being prarabdha karmas. And we need to realize, you know, what prarabdha karma is. It's even if we have a huge amount of sanchitta karma, doesn't influence anything unless it's part of the prarabdha karma. that portion of samsara which is actually going to impact this life. You know, we could have 500 karmas, say, and only 100 are going to impact this life. 400 are just sitting there and have no influence whatsoever on this life. How do you know which ones are influencing this life? Well, someone who's good in astrology can see. You can see from the astrological chart what is the Prarabdha karma that's coming into this life. So, out of all the karma, the ones that would influence childhood reactions are just the Prarabdha karma. What are other influences from past lives? Spiritual evolution influence. No one got this one. Another source of Shama, you were touching on this. Another source of influence from past lives is the maturity of the soul body. Or said another way, the amount of spiritual evolution the person has achieved. Gurudeva, the sequential pattern of spiritual evolution is experienced by each individual in a microcosmic sense in each lifetime. Even if they have been experienced in a previous life, the lessons contained in each stage are, in a sense, relearned in childhood. If we have previously learned them, then they will be quickly mastered. But if we have not yet learned these lessons in another life, we draw to ourselves in this life the experiences that we need to do. This knowledge is an inheritance that comes along with the physical body. In other words, experiences from other lives affect the patterns of experience in this life. Applying this to our question of does that influence our childhood reactions? Definitely. The more mature the soul, the less emotional would be the reactions, and the sooner understanding would manifest. So those of you who have a lot of experience with children could, you know, verify that you know, children get upset, but how quickly they get through the upset and how quickly they learn, I'm sure, varies a great deal. And they're not at all the same. They have different abilities. They can move forward at different speeds. Some take longer to work through different things than others do. So even though the karma is exactly the same, the problem to karma, how you react to experiences is strongly influenced by the maturity of your soul. In other words, you won't get as upset by something. You'll be able to pull yourself together more quickly if the soul is mature. The soul is a body of life. It matures. So its ability to harness the emotion gets stronger and stronger. And at some point, you just don't get emotional anymore because the body of the soul is so strong. So that is a different factor in different people, totally independent of karma. Okay, desire. Strong desires held at the time of transition can impact what we experience as a child. For example, if we are part of a strong, extended family, we might desire to reincarnate into that family, and thus that desire is influencing the type of parents we will have in our childhood experiences. It has nothing to do with Prarabdha Karma. We've manifested this situation not because of our Prarabdha Karma, but because of our desires and at the time we were passing on in our last life. Totally different factor. What we desire at the time of transition impacts where we end up, what family we have in this one, what country we're in, which is coming up. We could have a strong desire to reincarnate into a family who are devotees of Gurudeva. I have a question from a man. He says, what can I do in this life to make sure I get born as a monk in my next life? I haven't answered him yet, but clearly the desire at the point of transition is a very important part of the answer. And actually having that desire, you can't all of a sudden totally change who you are. You have to actually want that at that point. Otherwise it won't be there. Or if we had a strong attachment to another country, we could be born there. This is also known as the cheapest form of travel. That's my sense of humor. Think about it and be born there. So that happens, you know. People in India want to be in the U.S. and they didn't make it. So they can end up there in their next life if they have no strong attachments to family in India. But family would trump that. If you're strongly attached to a certain family, you know, meaning an extended family in the sense of dozens of people is a family in the old sense. If you're strongly attached to that group, you keep getting reborn into that group. It's just a very good system because you have a similarity of culture, of tradition from one life to the next, which means you move forward. It's very confusing if you totally jump cultures and you have to adjust. Gurudeva, in what country do you become born? It all depends upon what country you were thinking about before and when you die. If you had a desire to go to Canada, most likely you will be born in Canada next time around. You've been thinking of going to South America a year or two before you passed away, you would be reincarnated in South America because that was your destination. If you were very much attached to your own particular family and you did not want to leave them, you would be born back in that immediate family again because your desire is there. The astral body is the body of desire. So clearly, if we desire to be born into a certain family, we're born there, then all the reactions we have in childhood don't come because of prarabdha karma, right? We chose that family consciously. So that is a strong factor in what we'll experience, this desire. Knowledge acquired, experiences undergone. Astrological charts point out another aspect of what carries over from past lives and influences us in the current one, starting with reactions to childhood. It is significant knowledge. Here are two quotes from different charts. I found this interesting. Well, I'm not that knowledgeable in astrology, but I ran across these. Often this position indicates knowledge of medicine or healing arts are brought over from a past incarnation. So normally you don't think anything comes over except punyam or papam. But knowledge can come over, not in the sense of, you know, being able on day one to rattle something off, but if you've mastered a certain field of knowledge, that mastery carries over, and therefore you can learn it very quickly in your next life. That same idea. You go through it from the beginning, but you go through it so quickly because you've mastered it previously. Quest of knowing the ultimate reality will be pronounced. Strong interest for spiritual attainments, driven by previous actions, to continue to seek enlightenment. So it's not arbitrary. This person wants to be a monk, wants to do that. Why do they want to do it? Because that's what they were doing in their past lives. Carries forward. Nothing to do with karma. The karma of individuals that both have these qualities could be totally different. So it's another influence from past lives. Certainly an individual with significant knowledge carrying over will react differently to his or her childhood experiences from someone who has not developed knowledge in past lives. Gurudeva develops this idea further in saying, death, what is it? The dropping off of the physical body is the time when all of the karma-making actions go back to seed in the Muladhara chakra into the memory patterns. All of our actions, reactions, and the things we have set in motion and the pranic patterns in this life form the tendencies of our nature in our next incarnation. Tendencies of our nature in the present incarnation are the ways in which awareness flows through the Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna currents. So it sounds like karma for a minute, but it's not. Karma is that which is unresolved. This is saying everything we've done in the past carries forward in some way. Not just karma, not just unresolved reactions to actions. So we have to always be careful not to make karma more than it is. Karma phala is just the fruit of actions. Sanchitta karma, the sum total of those that have carried forward. You know, it's a very specific thing. It's not everything we've ever done in our past lives. It's only the unresolved reactions to past actions, to this karma. If it's resolved, it's not karma anymore. We are now a sum total, and we are always continuing a sum total. A past life is not really so many years ago. That's not the way to look at it. It is now. This is beautiful. Each life is within or inside the other. They exist as karmic seeds that appear in the pranic force fields in our life now, and like seeds when watered, they grow into plants. These seeds are nourished by prana. When we die, when we discard the physical body, that is the end of a chapter of experience. Then we pick up a new physical body. This begins a new chapter. It is always referring back to the last chapter for direction. These are tendencies. So, summary. Clearly, Prarabdha Karma is only one way our past lives carry over into the present life and influence our reactions. Spiritual evolution, strong desires at the time of transition, and past experiences and the knowledge developed from those experiences are also influences. Gurudeva, people wonder about their past lives, but it doesn't really matter who you were in your past lives. It is the cumulative creation of what you've done in the past, which has manifested in what you are in this life, that should concern you. So that's a wonderful way of looking at it. We're the sum total of all our past lives in the present. We can't not be, because it carries forward through the Muladhara Chakra. What we've done in the past carries forward, not just the unresolved karma, but who we are, what we learned, who we became. What do you think? 25 minutes?
Question?
17 minutes. Yes, question.
Well, back to the person's first question.
Mm-hmm.
So his question is in that sense, is there real freedom?
Mm-hmm.
Your answer is yes. There is freedom.
Well, he's saying, isn't it all determined by karma? I wouldn't say he's saying is there freedom. He's making karma into something bigger than it is. He's kind of crossing the line between everything we did in the past and that which is the unresolved reactions to what we did in the past. But definitely everything we've done in past lives makes us who we are now, so in that sense it does influence everything, but even that isn't the only influence, because desire, soul evolution, knowledge, those are also equal influences in this mix. So even though someone's karma was the same, their reactions could be totally different, depend to the same childhood experiences based upon soul maturity, for example. They would react totally different with identical karma. So that's what we're trying to point out, is that karma is just one of, I think we've listed five influences that we bring forward from the past.
Lordy, now there's a momentum. We have many momentums in our life, right? Mm-hmm. Spiritual desires or whatever. That meets karma. A certain karma could crush a soul, where if somebody has enough spiritual momentum, they would go through that experience like it was...
Well, yes, absolutely. That's the point, let me write down 17 minutes. There's questions. Huh? Well, that's the point. That's what I'm calling spiritual maturity. The ability not to be crushed. You know, you get two people, they have the same experience, they have the same karmas. One is crushed and one isn't. Why? Well, one is wiser. One is able to work through it because of greater spiritual maturity. The other isn't, and it takes longer to pull together. Eventually we'll pull together. But doesn't have the buoyancy, the resilience. Can't laugh at it. You know, can't accept it as his or her own creation. Can't accept it as something God should let happen, you know. So... Okay, another question? Yes.
Question is there something beyond the karma of the individual, like the karma of a community or a country? Because as a country, maybe like that is a kind of the way we act.
Mm-hmm.
Animosity between another country, going to a war, or like being in a very friendlier kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. So what is that? Is there such a concept, and what is the effect of that on an individual?
Well, that's actually one of the questions that's coming up. If we get to it. I'm not sure how much we'll get through in 3 days. So we'll have to comment on each thing as it comes up, because we don't want to say, oh, we'll get to that, and then we don't. So, yes, the idea is family karmas between the current family members, karmas, if it's a strong family from past generations because it's carrying forward, they exist. But they're quite secondary to our individual karma. But they do exist. They do create something we have to work through. The take the one Gurudeva mentioned, execution, capital punishment. There's a karma that goes to every individual, the judge, the lawyers, the executioners, for being involved in capital punishment. Rudra saw it once. It's not a big karma, but it's there. You know, same if you get into medical procedures you're not supposed to be doing. There's karmas on those who are involved, just because they're the nurse. So, but it's secondary. There's karmas a nation, you know, the United States goes to war against Iraq unilaterally. There's a karma there. Japan bombs Pearl Harbor. There's a karma there. It affects everyone in the country. But it's secondary. Definitely a secondary karma, but it does pass over. The karma between the living members of a family, parents and children, is probably the strongest karma that's shared by individuals. So the actions of the parents, the karma of the parents rubs off on the kids, and the karma of the kids rubs off on the parents, and you can't really separate it all. In fact, it's not healthy to separate it all. You think you're helping your child, but you can't help your child without helping yourself, because that person isn't your child randomly. It's all tied together. So we help our children, and if we're successful in doing so, we're also helping ourselves. And the problems that they face are problems we're supposed to face. So, and that's hard to accept when it's a serious problem. But it's all tied together in a very mysterious way. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, not if you do it right, and it gets very complicated when you start to pin it down to actual situations. And I've never seen a Gurudeva comment on it, but in the abstract it's very simple, that you take people in armed services, policemen, same thing. What do? They take an oath. Before they start service, they take an oath. And they pledge to uphold a certain code of behavior. And, for example, policemen, they just can't go around arbitrarily shooting someone. And if they use their weapon when they shouldn't have, they get disciplined. You know, they're not immune. You shouldn't have done it. These are the rules. You broke the rules. So as long as you follow the rules, and you've taken an oath, and therefore the karma doesn't accrue to you, because we need them. You know, the world is what it is, and countries need armed forces. Otherwise, you know, we'd all be one country, but I don't know which one. The one that kept the armed forces. You know, we're separate countries because we have armed forces. Unfortunately, you know, the world Still need some. Okay, well, let's move on. Okay, so where are we here? Second question. So the quote, Tirukkural quote, is part of the question. What is there that is mightier than destiny? For it is present even in the plans we devise to overcome it. Appears from this Quran that everything happens according to one's karma, and there is little one can do to change it. In Bodhinatha's karma management course, one of the principles is mitigation of karma. Does this mean that one is able to take steps to mitigate his karma only if his karma permits it? Who can solve that one? Is the question even clear? Maybe the question isn't clear. It is, it's just the answer isn't clear. In other words, you have a karma and you try and circumvent it. Is it really possible? According to the Quran, you can't do it. But somehow your plan will fail. It looks good, but it won't work. Okay.
Is it okay if the corral isn't completely correct?
Corral is wrong.
Yeah, it's a good guy.
Well, it's correct, but it's correct only if you're taking a certain approach. And that's what we have to figure out. What approach is it talking about?
So it's how you react to your karma. You can't escape your karma, but you can mitigate by how you face it.
That's true, yes. Normally, karma is only mitigated. It's only lessened. It's not eliminated. Yes.
I think the Quran is saying that even the plans that we devise to overcome is the karma, is the destiny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's what is mighty in the destiny for it's present even in the plans you devise to overcome. In other words, it's our destiny to devise those plans to overcome.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, but it doesn't mean that. If you read the other verses, you can see it doesn't mean that.
Oh, okay.
That's the trouble of taking something out of context. Yes, yeah.
I was just thinking that it would also depend on your spiritual maturity again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. Yes, you have to, it depends on the amount of wisdom you have. Okay, well, let's, we want to do this one backwards. Because I'll rewrite this for the Singapore group, but I can see that the story is good first. So there's a story here about, there's a story about a Hindu king. See the Hindu king story? 2 pages forward. Story, there's a story about a Hindu king. Okay, unfortunately the web didn't find the story. I mean, I was really disappointed. Usually the web finds everything. So, this is a very rough detail. But it's a story trying to show this very point. The king was told by the court astrologer that his son would die from a snake bite. To prevent this from happening, the king kept the son indoors in rooms that were totally snake-proof. Solve the problem, right? How can you go wrong? One day the son was playing with a toy snake made out of wood and straw and managed to prick his finger with the toy snake. Soon after, the finger became infected and the son died of a fever from the infection. So that's the story I read, roughly. Anybody else ever run into that story? I'm sure it exists somewhere. So you see the point. Okay, he understands the problem and he solves the problem through logic. It's just human logic. He hasn't done any spiritual practice. He hasn't gone to the temple. He's not meditating. He's not invoking any spiritual energy. He's just using his brain. He's using his human resource trying to outwit the karma. So that's really what this is talking about. You know, you can't outwit karma. What is there that is mightier than destiny? For it is present even in the plans we devise to overcome it. Plans. So if you're just trying to plan, it doesn't necessarily fix the problem. So what fixes the problem if that doesn't? Well, that's on the other page. Back one. Changing our karma through worship. Worship, bhakti yoga, that is intense enough. Okay. Intense is the key word. Enough to cause us to receive the grace of God Shiva or the grace of Ganesha or Murugan can change the patterns of karma dating back many past lives, clearing and clarifying conditions that were created hundreds of years ago and are but seeds now waiting to manifest in the future. So that's the idea. Our plans, our intellect can't get rid of it, but the grace of the deity can, if our worship is intense enough. So that'll be explained more. The first way karma can be changed is to mitigate it, meaning make it less harsh, painful, or severe. So you've heard my example before, most of you. You commit armed robbery, you receive a 10 to 20 year sentence, but you're on your good behavior there, and they let you out in 5 years. So the sentence, the normal karma, has been mitigated. Why? Because you behaved well. So that's the analogy. You've made your sentence less severe, mitigated it through your good behavior. So Gurudeva uses this one in the Master Course. You're destined to lose a leg in this life because of past life action. If you're living a selfish, low-minded kind of life, you know, just an ordinary, self-centered life, then the karma would come and you'd lose your leg. That's the karma. However, if you're a kindly person who worships at the temple and helps others, then the karma would be mitigated. So you read in the paper about someone losing their leg and you experience the whole thing emotionally, just as if it had happened to you. So you go through the emotional experience, and then later on you stumble and you scratch it, but not severely. So the karma came. You experienced the emotional action of losing your leg, but the physical action of just getting a scratch. That's the example Gurudeva uses in the Master Course. So the karma was mitigated through a combination of some worship and good actions in this example. Karma can be totally eliminated through worship. So this is, again, has the analogy to seeds. So sprouts. You're all familiar with sprouts, making sprouts? So normally you stick sprouts in a cool, moist place and then they sprout, they germinate. So what is needed to make them not germinate? You heat them, right? If you heat the seeds and then you put them in those heat them sufficiently in a frying pan, if you heat them and then put them in those conditions, they won't sprout, right? They've lost the ability to sprout. So the seed, when it experiences enough fire, won't germinate. So that's the analogy to a karma being eliminated. The karma is a seed in this comparison that experiences enough fire in one form or another, mental fire, then it won't germinate. So what can do that? The intense blessings of the deity. Gurudeva comments on this. Visiting a Hindu temple, receiving darshan from the majestic gods of our religion can altogether change the life of a worshipper. It alters the flow of the pranas or life currents within his body. Draws his awareness into the deeper chakras. It adjusts his beliefs and the attitudes that are natural consequences of those beliefs. But the change is slow. He lives with the experience for months and months after his visit to the temple. Comes to know and love the deity. The deity comes to know and love him, helping and guiding his entire evolutionary pattern. Darshan, Gurudeva means energy, when it uses darshan in that sense, coming from the great temples of our gods, can change the patterns of karma dating back many past lives, clearing and clarifying conditions that were created hundreds of years ago and are but seeds now waiting to manifest in the future. Through the grace of the gods, those seeds can be removed if the manifestation in the future will not enhance the evolution of the soul. So those are, to turn the page, those are the two effects of the blessings of the deity. Karma can be mitigated or even eliminated, but requires an intensity of worship. So what does that mean? Fortunately, it says, dropping by the temple for 15 minutes on the way home from work is unlikely to accomplish such a transformation. That's what won't do it. What are some of the ways we can generate an intensity of worship? So three ways. Pilgrimage is an excellent way to generate an intensity of worship. Over the years, Gurudeva's devotees have pilgrimaged to India, visiting major temples such as Chidambaram, Rameshwaram, Palani Hills. Many have come back transformed. Not 100%, but it means changed in a major way. That's what it's trying to say. Transformed is not the best word. We will reword that. How do you know? Well, they physically look a little different. They behave a little differently. And they fit back into life in a more positive way than before. That's how you know. You can see it. They're somewhat changed on the inside. They're not the same person they were. They've gotten rid of a burden. You know, it's like if you know someone who has an emotional burden, you know, someone in their life passed on, and then you meet them a year or two later, and you see that they've gotten through it. You know, they got through that burden. Oh, they're back to themselves. Well, in this case, they're not back to themselves. They've improved. They're a new, improved version of themselves. New, improved version. It's like a new system in a computer. So, their karma was definitely changed by the grace of the gods. So some of it was eliminated. That's what it means. I should say that.
Hmm? Through the grace of the gods, these seeds can be removed if the manifestation of the future would not enhance the evolution of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean because you worship, now you don't need to go through whatever was coming?
It's gone. Yes, it won't happen. It got burned. The seed was
burned.
The seed won't sprout. It was fried. It was by the intense blessings of the deity. Fried it, and it's gone. It won't happen. So it eliminates the rougher or the peripheral challenges in life that you don't need. If such an intensity occurs, yes. Oh, Sanchita as well. Yeah, that's both. Yes.
Now, when we receive help in day-to-day things in life, prayers, the Homa or just prayers to Ganesha, you put that in the same category? Simple things kind of clearing up after?
No, that's not eliminating a karma. That might involve mitigating a karma. Eliminating is different. It hasn't started yet. You're erasing something before it even starts. You're rewriting the script of what's going to happen that hasn't started yet. That's what it's talking about. The other, if it involves karma, is mitigating, making something work out better than it would otherwise. So this is eliminating two different things. Yes.
So tapas eliminates karma, but then going to the temple and performing your daily pujas and everything, would
too many things here. Well, that normally regular worship mitigates. It lessens the negative, lessens the negativity of a karma. It's not as disruptive. But, and that's usually all that happens. But it, on occasion, if worship is really intense, such as we're using these examples, first time we got through his pilgrimage, it can actually eliminate a karma that hasn't even started to manifest yet. Oh, yes. Is that all right?
So the question is, like, if the entire life of all of us, it's just a play of like Shiva, and he is already guiding us. So if we were to take the approach that whatever comes to us is just a gift from Shiva, if you have that level of maturity of mind, whether it's good or bad, in that case, should we just continue to go ahead and then live our life to fulfill our duties, or try and resolve all these other karmas that is difficult to handle, or that we want to not see in our future life? What approach is better, or if that is something worth exploring?
Well, I'd say that we naturally end up doing it without identifying it as such. In other words, we reach a point in one of our lives where it doesn't feel right to be without worship, one form or another. And before then, we weren't that interested. But we just becomes part of our life naturally. And therefore, because we're worshiping, we're already mitigating karmas, even without thinking about it. So it's a natural process. So what we're just analyzing it, and that makes it seem something we might do consciously, but usually we wouldn't do it consciously. It's a natural byproduct of our the soul expressing itself more and more in our outer nature. Last question, yes. Because the Jyotisha told you about it, would that soften the karma?
You were already, some of the comments were harsh and coming, and when the planets were da-da-da-da-da, then you would be prepared for that, you wouldn't react, so...
Not necessarily. It could scare you to death. If he told you too much. It's like a doctor telling a patient too much, you know. He was going to live another 5 years, but he got scared to death by knowing it all. It totally depends. If you're someone who is emotionally, has excellent control of your emotions and doesn't panic easily, then knowing certain things is very helpful, definitely. And it all depends on how it was presented, too. Yes.
Was going to be difficult. If you have that understanding, then it can help you not react. Think, oh my goodness, it's all out of control.
Yes, well, definitely. If you have a certain maturity and understanding your astrology, it can be very helpful. Our simple guideline is that it's important to check it before major changes in your life. You know, you're going to put your life savings into a new business. You want to know what your astrology is going to be over the next few years. Is this a time when everything's easy for you, or a time when everything's difficult? You don't want to do it if your chart says this is a difficult time coming up. You want to wait till the chart says this is a good time. This is an easy time to be successful. So for major decisions, you know, that involve... moving for retirement somewhere, when to do that and how to do that. Putting a lot of money into an investment or into a business, you want to check your astrology. You don't want to lose the money. You don't want it to go poorly. But on a day-to-day, year-to-year basis, you know, unless you seem to be hitting a lot of difficulties, you don't have to necessarily be reading it every week. Depends on your amount of interest. But that's the minimum we suggest, is checking it before making the really... There's only a few major moves we make in our life, and checking it before those. Okay, let's get through the other two here. A vrata or vow can also generate an intensity of worship, such as fasting during the day and attending the temple on each of the 6 days of Skanda Shashti, or the 21 days of Vinayaka Vratam. So that's a really good one. And those of you not familiar with that pattern, and we have Skanda Shashti coming up next week, I think it starts. And so how does it work? Well, when someone observes it, Skanda Shashti, Shashti means six, isn't always 6 days because it's six titis. So sometimes it fits into 5 days, which it does this year. So for the 5 days, if you're following this vrata, you don't eat a meal during the day. Depends on the people. People follow it differently. Some just have water, some beverages, some fruit. And then you attend an evening worship, ideally at a Murugan temple, and then after attending the worship, that's when you have a full meal. So you don't have a full meal till you worship, and you do that for the 5 days in the case of this year. That generates an intensity of worship. And then if you have free time during the day, you'd spend it chanting some Muruga bhajans and Muruga mantra, or reading some Muruga scriptures and trying to tune into that, tune into the deity. And that creates an intensity without a pilgrimage. Penance, prayachitta, is the third way. So in our tradition, the largest one is Taipusam. That's when you get millions of people in places such as Batu Caves in Malaysia performing some kind of penance to Lord Muruga. And fasting and hardship of some kind is undergone, preparation for that, and it's a way of clearing karma that is quite effective. Some other ones, you can walk around a sacred lake, up a sacred path, prostrate up a sacred path, prostrate around the temple. Sometimes in Sri Lanka you'll see men rolling around a temple. And that sand is kind of hot, so it's not like an enjoyable thing. So the idea is you're kind of punishing yourself in one way or another, inflicting some punishment on yourself, not an unreasonable one. So the karma doesn't have to punish you. You're getting it over with. Okay, why have karma punish me in some unknown way when I can punish myself in this way and get rid of the karma? That's the idea. So that gives you a sense of what we're talking about here, and that our story, you can't necessarily outthink karma, you know, because it's just thinking. But you can get the blessings of the deity, which is a totally different realm and totally different energy that has the power to get in there and mitigate at least, or sometimes even eliminate the karma depending on, you know, what you've done to receive the blessings. Okay, let's see what we did. 24 minutes with some questions. Any other questions on that?
Mm-hmm. Is it necessary for a guru to assign your penance?
No, not if you know what you're doing. Well, it's different than penance. Let me come back to that. The question of penance isn't exactly what we're talking about. It's similar. Penance, in the sense that we use it, is you did something in this life and you feel bad about it. And it's not resolved in your mind. So, if you have a guru, it's good to talk to him about it, because you might choose to do something and go through all the hardship and it might not be an effective penance. That's a waste. But, you know, being lighthearted about it. But there's some standard penances for different things, and sometimes you might overdo it too. You might feel so badly about something that looks to you, it looks huge, but to someone else it looks very small. It's not really a big thing. Or it may not even require a penance. You did something when you were a teenager, you know, and now you're 55 years old, and it can be so small it doesn't require penance. You know, it was big back then, but it's small in the perspective of your life. So penance is trying to address a specific misdeed in this life, and that misdeed could create a karma, or it might not have. It might not have involved anyone else. So, somewhat different. Similar. In other words, the benefit of doing this type of prayaschitta or penance can affect karmas from past lives, and also can be done for something in this life. It relates to both. In this context, we're talking about past lives. Bringing in a karma from a past life. Not something you did wrong in this life. Any other questions? We have a couple more minutes here. We'll try and stop at 12. Is that fun? Learn something? Had to think, huh? No one fell asleep. Okay. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastu, Ma Vidvishavah.